77 WABC. The following program does not necessarily reflect the views of WABC Radio.
The following program is brought to you by NYU Winthrop Hospital. It's the weekend. Be good to yourself. It's Katz's Corner with Dr. Aaron Katz, where you get simple, straightforward answers to your questions about health, from diet and supplements to lifestyle changes. To reach Dr. Katz, call 800-848-WABC. Now, live on 77 WABC, it's the chairman of urology at NYU Winthrop Hospital in New York. Here is Dr. Aaron Katz.
Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to Katz's Corner here on WABC Radio in New York. I'm your host, Dr. Aaron Katz, and we're live if you want to give us a call at 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. We've got a wonderful show for you this morning. I have on the line an outstanding guest, and, you know, each year we have our Men's Health Seminar in June. And this year, our keynote speaker was Dr. Michael Roizen, who is Chief Wellness Officer at the Cleveland Clinic. And he's done, he's published so many books, New York Times bestseller leading author, and also has worked a lot with Dr. Mehmet Oz. He's peer-reviewed so many scientific journals himself. And he is really a leader in not only men's health, but all health, really. He's done a terrific job. And this year, The seminar was just so great, and I needed to have him to come back on the show and talk with us, because his messages are so important for everyone. So, again, if you want to give us a call, the lines are open, 1-800-848-WABC. Good morning, Dr. Roizen. How are you this morning?
Aaron, I'm very well. Thank you, Dr. Katz.
Well, good morning. And, you gave us so many outstanding messages at the seminar. One of the key ones, was that you made us all realize that we are living longer. When you showed us some graphs, I guess, and from the early 1900s, you know, living, it was rare to live in your 80s and 90s, and now we're seeing, people are living much longer. Give us your thoughts on that, and how we all can live longer and healthier, and what we need to do.
Yeah, so longevity has been what you might call the stealth disruptor. You know, we had the wheel and fire, and now the chip, as the electric engine, et cetera. But the chip has been what people have thought of as the major disruptor. But almost unrecognized has been longevity as a disruptor. So the average age in 1900, the average person lived to age 47. Now it's around 80, women living a little longer than men in developed countries. And the question is, will it extend beyond this? Most of the changes have been in public health, that is, better sanitation and better medical care, that is, getting antibiotics and vaccines to prevent the infectious diseases. Now people are looking at the basic mechanisms of aging and saying, look, we don't get arthritis unless we age. We generally don't get cancer until we're older. We don't get heart disease till we're older. Is there an underlying mechanism for this? And there's a lot of research now going on in these fields, and we're extending the life of, if you will, worms in culture by 3 to 4 times. We're extending the life of the smaller mammals by 30 to 40% routinely. And now all of a sudden, maybe with mice at least, there is an aging breakthrough where you can reboot cells so that an old mouse can become a young mouse again. And the question is, can we do this with us? That is, can we as a 70-year-old get a rebooter, as an 80-year-old get a reboot, and become a 20-year-old again? And that's one of the questions of what's going on in research and where the aging community, the aging research community is going. So this may be, with your own behaviors now, you can get about 30 years younger. That is through stress management and exercise, eating the right food, avoiding toxins, not having what we call unforced errors. You can live a lot younger. That's what we did with real age. So real age, are you as young as you can be? You can be about 30 years younger than your calendar age. So at 90, you could function as a 60-year-old. That's doable now. And the question we're grappling with is, will you be able to get a lot younger? That is, how likely is it that by 2030, you'll be able to be half the calendar age you are now? And most of the aging researchers think it's very likely.
You know, let me just stop you there for a second. I mean, it's, I saw the Mission, I saw the Mission Impossible movie last night, right, with Tom Cruise. I mean, he looks fantastic. I don't know if you saw the movie. It's a fantastic movie, by the way. But I was looking at him as and he's doing all these amazing, and a lot of these stunts that he does, I think he does himself. And I'm looking at him, and I'm thinking, wow, you know, I think he's in his mid-50s, and he looks probably 20 years younger, like you say. But it probably takes, he's a very wealthy man. He probably has a team of nutritionists, and he works out probably 3-4 hours a day. I mean, I can't imagine Tom Cruise eating a McDonald's cheeseburger ever, you know? I mean, and his skin is fantastic. And yeah, certainly a lot of it is genetics, but then there is this whole 24-hour probably program that he's on that, you know, I think maybe it is possible, like you're saying, to you know, maybe reverse some aging, but wow, it takes so much effort. Am I wrong on that?
Yes. So the easy things, the common things, it does take a purpose and intention, but it doesn't take a huge amount of effort compared to what you're doing now. So let me just go through. So the major thing is doing 5 minutes of stress management morning and evening.
What does that mean?
What that means is that there are 12 techniques in stress management. One is deep breathing. You put your finger on your belly button, and for 5 minutes you concentrate on whether your belly button is moving away from your belly, away from your spine, or back towards it. And so in other words, as you take a breath in, your finger should move away from your spine, and when you breathe out, it should move back, and you focus on that.
Okay.
Or meditation, or guided imagery. You pick an image that you focus on, and you focus on that for 5 minutes. And what you learn is then how to do this routinely, so that when stressful life events occur, you're not aged by that stress. So whether the event will occur or not, whether someone will sue you or not, whether you'll have an argument with your spouse or not, you can't control that very well. But what you can control is your reaction to it. And stress is the greatest ager. So one of those is taking 5 minutes morning and night, not very much time. A second is avoiding toxins. Now, the leading toxin is tobacco, but we also know that when we, if you will, the air we breathe can be toxic if you go into a crowded area where there's a lot of smokers. So you don't want to go into smoker rooms. You don't want to go into places where you know there's going to be some form of toxins.
Yeah, but that's, you know, you don't see the smoker rooms anymore, thankfully, as much. But I do when I'm walking in the streets of New York City and I see the huge bus come by and have this huge plume of exhaust from the bus as the bus revs up and starts and I'm about to cross the street. And I find myself holding my breath because, I mean, it's probably silly, you know, because there's so many of that toxic fumes in the air. But as this bus is just exploding with all this, you know, toxic fumes from the exhaust there, I take a deep breath, hold my breath for a little while. But some things you just can't, you're in an environment. I understand the smoke room, I get that, but the rest of the toxins that we breathe in, it's hard. Yeah.
The second leading toxin we have is BPA or BPS. It's an endocrine disruptor, so it means that instead of producing estrogen or testosterone, you produce something that doesn't have the same effects. Where is that? That's actually on the receipt paper. People take the receipts, which you don't need, the thermal receipts, meaning their gas station or their fast food or their restaurant, or what do you do with them? Well, you see the women smash them in their purse, and the guys fold them up and put them in their wallet for some reason, but they don't do anything with them. When you do that, you get a lot of BPA and BPS on your hands. It doesn't affect you if you do a couple receipts a day, but it affects you if you then eat with that receipt paper on your hand, because you transfer the BPA or BPS to the food, then you put it in your mouth. So we see it in fast food restaurants where the mother or father or grandmother or grandfather unpeels the hamburger for the kid after taking the receipt for their grandchild, and then gives them the hamburger. Well, that's then transferred all of that BPA or BPS.
That's interesting. So, I never heard that. Wow.
So it's just avoiding some of those simple things is another one.
I like that one.
The third thing is just avoiding.
Yeah, I never take the receipt anyway. So if you go into Walgreens or something and you buy something for milk or water and you want a receipt, what do I need a receipt for? I mean, I'm not returning it, you know?
Correct.
So silly, yeah.
We filmed an awful lot. We filmed 17 hours of film for the Dr. Oz show on people in mothers and fathers in fast food restaurants. All kinds of fast food restaurants, and about 50% of people take the receipt.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The third one is, what food do you eat? So there is an intention, but it doesn't take much to not eat the five food fountains. So there are only five foods or five food types that you want to avoid, and then everything else helps keep you younger. So the five foods are foods that are simple sugars, that is raising your blood sugar too fast, changes the sugar gets on the proteins in your blood and changes their function. So you don't want foods that raise sugar too fast, which is simple sugars or added sugars, added syrups, or simple carbohydrates. So the three S's are the first of the five food fountains. The other two, trans fat is now banned. So you don't have to worry about that one as much. There still are foods with it in it. And then foods with saturated fat. So red meat, egg yolks, cheese, it's not the saturated fat that does it. It's the proteins with it that change the bacteria inside your gut that cause inflammation in you. So you want to avoid those totally, because those cause inflammation in you. You could have one egg yolk a week, or you could have 4 ounces of red meat, but not both in a week, without changing the bacteria inside yourself. But once you do more than that, within 2 weeks, the bacteria changes and produces inflammation.
So and what about egg whites? Is that that's all right?
Egg whites are fine.
So only one yolk a week? Well, I'm definitely over that, because I love eggs. But yeah, okay. So that's
and then the fourth one does take some time, but that's 10,000 steps a day, and then three times a week doing 20 minutes of cardio, twice a week doing 20 minutes of resistance or weight training, and then jumping 40 times a day. You do those. Those are the four basics. And what happens is you'll normalize your blood pressure, you'll normalize your LDL cholesterol, you'll normalize your fasting blood sugar, your weight will stay down, you'll done stress management so you know how to manage it, and then you'll avoid tobacco. Avoiding those six things, or getting normal on those six, means that you have an 80 to 90% less chance of having chronic disease. And that's really the major cause of the aging. So just
what? Let me ask you just specifically. What, like, just for breakfast? What do you think is a great breakfast? I mean, I'm sitting here with I don't even know what to eat anymore. I mean, I'm sitting here with yogurt and granola and an espresso. How is that?
Well, the espresso, if it's just black, is perfect.
Just black.
The granola depends on what they put with it, but if you're having whole grain granola without a lot of saturated fat, meaning it's got nuts, et cetera, that's fine. And in the yogurt, no added sugar, no added, if you will, other things, it makes it a perfect idea. So, but what we have to do is stop stereotyping foods. So having salmon for breakfast is great. Having
salmon for breakfast?
Yeah, having, you know.
The only time I've ever had that is when I went to Japan. I mean, they eat a lot of fish over there, and I noticed that even in the morning, they had, like, raw salmon that they were serving. Yeah. But here in America, no one has salmon for breakfast. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Having salmon for breakfast. Well, what we're saying is you don't want to stereotype food. We want you to have more salads for dinner and more food, because that's another component of it. You want to eat while the sun is up. And the earlier in the day you eat, the easier it is to control your weight. Your body adjusts to it, it turns out. But let's go. So having steel-cut oatmeal, you make it once on Sunday or Saturday, and then it's good for the whole week. You can have small portions of it. So steel-cut oatmeal is another great choice if you want.
Yeah, that doesn't take too long to make, yeah. Okay.
And they're even whole grain. And then we think lunch should be actually the meal with the most of the common things we in America have for dinner, such as, I could give a shameless plug for my next book, but the next book is What to Eat When, which actually answers your question perfectly, because it talks about not only what to eat before a race, what to eat to build muscle, what to eat to decrease the risk of heart disease, what to eat to if you want to increase your testosterone level, what to eat to increase fertility, etc. So it goes through those specific subjects, but the early part of the book talks about what the data are on when we should eat. And it turns out that if you eat the same calories in the morning and at dinner, you weigh less if you eat them in the morning, because our body apparently adjusts to it and increases our metabolic rate.
So have a light dinner. Is that the message?
Have a light dinner and don't eat within 2 hours of sleep.
Right. So, you also talked in your, and by the way, if you're just tuning in, by the way, we're talking with Dr. Michael Roizen, who is Cleveland Clinic's chief wellness officer and served as its founding chair of its wellness institute in 2007. And he's really an outstanding author. He's actually coming out with a new book, so maybe you'll tell us more about that. And he really is devoted to helping people live longer. And during your talk this year in June, when you came to to NYU Winthrop's Men's Health Seminar, you mentioned about vitamins, and you thought that it is still important for us to take a daily multivitamin. Is that right?
Right. The data on this we know that the 10-year data, there's actually a very funny story, or I think it's a funny story, on Jim Allison. Jim Allison studied immunotherapy and is a PhD researcher, and all of the data on immunotherapy helping treat for cancer, it's now really standard of care, but all of the data in the early 2000s showed no effect. And that was 1 year data, but Jim Allison persisted and did 5 year data, and actually they had to stop the studies at 3 years, because the checkpoint inhibitor he developed was so effective, meaning at 1 year there was no greater survival using checkpoint inhibitors than there was in the control group, which is just chemotherapy and radiation therapy. But at 3 years, there was about a 20% survival in this malignant melanoma that had metastasized, as opposed to about a 3% in the control group. And they have kept doing that, and checkpoint inhibitors, that is things that make your immune function better, have now become standard of care. Well, that's kind of the story on multivitamin. The 10-year data on multivitamin and the 1-year data and the 5-year data show very little, if any, benefit unless you have a deficiency disease. But the 20-year data show a 25% reduction in cardiovascular disease and a 20% reduction in all cancers in men. So above the age of 50, we think it's important because of the break in cardiovascular disease and in cancer. Below the age of 50 in women, it's really important because taking a prenatal decreases congenital disease by as much as 85%, decreases autism and autism spectrum disorder by 40%, decreases the cancer in the offspring to age 6 by 65%.
All right, so I'm just going to, because we're a little short on time, I just want to get some messages to our listeners. So you're definitely clear about the multivitamin.
For 20 years, okay. Yeah, as long as okay. You take it consistently, it's a...
Okay, so multivitamin every day. And the data that you've done and the research that you've done on the fish oils, you feel still a positive on the fish oils every day?
Yeah, but fish oils are not fish oils are not fish oils. You want DHA omega-3. So
okay.
there are four fish oils, if you will, ALA, EPA, DHA. The effective one appears to be DHA. It's effective for brain and eye health. You want 900 milligrams a day. So if you're going to buy a fish oil, look for its DHA content or just get DHA. Or the easy way is 2 4-ounce dishes of salmon a week will do it too.
Now, a lot of our listeners are always asking me about, and this is fantastic information. I wish we had 4 hours to do this, but a lot of the listeners ask me about ways to improve their testosterone levels naturally. Do you think that can be done by eating certain foods or something that men can do naturally to boost their testosterone level as we get older?
The data aren't perfect, but there are hints on this. So the data are that grapes, pomegranates, and chunks of watermelon improve, if you will, L-citrulline. That is, they're rich in L-citrulline, which, when you have them, gets converted in the body to the effective amino acid, which is a nitrate, which helps you function. So that's a good thing. From a testosterone standpoint, cabbage and cruciferous vegetables contain a chemical that lowers estrogen level, so helpful in preventing prostate cancer. But they also, the zinc deficiency is associated with testosterone, and the, if you will, pumpkin seeds are something that contains a lot of zinc. And then, although we said salmon is high in vitamin D. It's one of the natural foods that has both the DHA, omega-3, and vitamin D, both of which are important in producing testosterone.
Boy, so salmon really has a lot of benefits. I mean, do you eat salmon every day?
I don't eat salmon every day, but I eat it at least 3 or 4 times a
really?
Week. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
They're, you know, a shameless plug, but I have no interest in the company or the stock.
Right.
Costco has these great salmon burgers that are inexpensive and are wild salmon, and they're easy to cook. So I often will cook 3 or 4 in the evening and have them for breakfast.
So on the, just to get back really quickly on the daily supplements, because we're all interested in that, and the multivitamin you're in favor of, the DHA form of omega-3s, and then vitamin D. What are your thoughts there? Do we need to take a vitamin D pill every day?
Yeah, it turns out that if you live, as most of your listeners will, north of a line between L.A. and Atlanta, that the sun doesn't have enough energy, even if you're out in it all day, to convert inactive to active vitamin D between October and April. So most of us by April are short of vitamin D. 70% of Americans who live in Pittsburgh or Cleveland are short when we've done the study. So a lot of us are short, and that's a level that isn't optimal. That's just for preventing bone defects. The level that is optimal, it turns out about 90% of us. So you get your level measured, you want to shoot for a level between 50 and 80. We know that 50 is better than 30 from a standpoint of preventing cancer. Since most of us are short and vitamin D is pretty inexpensive, you either get it in food or get it from a vitamin D supplement. We used to get it from drinking 4 to 10 glasses of milk when we were young. We don't advise that anymore, but that you get 100 international units every glass of milk. But the even better is just getting it as a supplement. And usually below age 65, you need 1,000. Between 65 and 75, 2,000 a day, because we don't absorb it or convert it as well in our skin as we get older. So get your level measured. The next thing is to talk to your doc about two babies, a baby aspirin once in the morning and once in the evening with a half a glass of warm water before and afterwards. Why the warm water? Because 70% of the side effects of the aspirin landing on your stomach lining. Why morning and evening? Well, the anti-clotting, the anti-heart attack and stroke effect lasts enough so you only need one a day, but the anti-cancer effect, and aspirin is really effective at preventing cancer, the anti-cancer effect only lasts about 12 hours, so you need one morning and evening.
Do you think everyone should take two aspirins a day, whether or not you have a heart attack or heart risk, or just everyone as a prevention over a certain age?
In other words, this relates to as you get older, you should do it, and you have to know that you're not doing extreme sports. So a 60-year-old guy who's still doing water skiing and doing skateboarding shouldn't take it, and that is the risk of bleeding is substantial. So you want to go over with your doc whether to take an aspirin or not, and then you want to take if it's okay to take one baby, you can take one in the morning and one in the evening without any increased risk in the studies compared to just one a day.
Dr. Michael Royzen is coming out with a new book. It's called What to Eat When. And this book will be coming out. I guess if people are interested, they can pre-order the book. Is that right? It's coming out next year, I believe you told me.
Right. If you go to Amazon or smile.amazon, it is, and put in Royzen, What to Eat When, you'll see that book. As you know, I've written 4 number one bestsellers, so I feel a little guilty talking about the books on the air is almost like I'm advertising them, but
no, people should know about it. It's fine. I mean, you're a wealth of information, and you've given us a lot of incredibly helpful hints every day. I mean, it's you know, as we were saying, it's difficult to manage things, and you know, we all have the daily lives that are stressful. So you've talked about stress reduction, talked about things, you know, things in our diet, supplements that we can take. I also include in my own life, since you told me about the jumping, I bought myself a jump rope and started jumping rope, including that in my daily exercise, which I think has been very helpful for my knees and hips and joints. So I want to thank you for that. And thank you for all of this wonderful information. Dr. Michael Royzen, What to Eat When, it'll be coming out very shortly, and you can check him out on Google. We have about 30 seconds left, Dr. Royzen. I want to thank you again so much for coming on Katz's Corner, and again for giving us an outstanding talk this year at the Men's Health Seminar. Any last thoughts in the last 30 seconds?
No, I thought the Men's Health Seminar that you have every June is wonderful.
Thank you.
And has much more information than just I gave. So do have your listeners come to it.
I certainly will. And we'll have you back on the show again real soon. Dr. Michael Royzen, Chief Wellness Officer at the Cleveland Clinic here on Katz's Corner. Thank you so much, Michael, for getting up on a Sunday and educating all of us. I hope that it was very helpful for all of you as it was for me. And we'll see you again next Sunday, every Sunday, here on WABC Radio in New York on Katz's Corner. Have a great day, everyone. This is Dr. Aaron Katz.
WABC, New York.